Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is on the third day of build. In the room, I have Kendall with me and two of our special guests that is going to be talking about disaster recovery.
Ooh.
We have Wong He. And we have Sujay, but because Juan is so much better at pronouncing Sujay's last name, so we're going to ask Juan to do this for us.
Awesome. Be happy to. Hi, my name is Wong He, and I have with me our senior product manager, program manager in disaster recovery space called Sujay Dalasila.
Yep, you got it, Karen.
Wow. Right.
I tried very hard. And I couldn't get it. So that was the strategy that we went with. But
I like it.
Awesome.
Why don't you, both of you, introduce yourself, tell our listeners a little bit more about what you do, what you are passionate about, and what you're here to tell us about disaster recovery.
Cool. Sujay, you want to start?
Hey, I'm Sujay Talasila. I work as Senior Program Manager in Azure Cloud and Enterprise Division. And I primarily focus on Azure Site Recovery product, which is disaster recovery as a service offering on Azure, which helps customers protect their applications, whether they're running on-prem, running on Azure virtual machines. You can have disaster recovery configured for those applications and get protections from all kinds of failures, such as data centers going down, racks going down, storage going down, any of that.
Awesome. Hi, my name is Juan. I'm a product marketing manager for Azure Site Recovery, as well as for other related resilience services such as Azure Backup and Availability Zones and the likes. And happy to be here.
So first question right in, what are the differences about all the resiliency suite of products that you just mentioned, and when should we use what?
Uh-huh. That's a great question. I'll probably frame it out. In terms of resilience, there are a lot of customers looking from different angles. But obviously for developers, they'd like to know, right, so what are the things that I'm responsible for when I build this application and I'm using most of it as PaaS? Or there may be customers, I have a lot of applications on different virtual machines, leveraging different type of storages. What are the things that I need to take care of, right? And there are like different failovers that you have to think about in terms of building that resilience strategy, right? So like for backup, a lot of people like kind of confuse between backup and disaster recovery. And backup is primarily for those customers who wants to kind of take a snapshot of the data for different timestamps. And they want to kind of go back in time and make sure that the data is safe in case of a ransomware attacks, or in case of a FATDOM of a rogue of an administrator doing some of those kind of things that does happen in the real time, in the real environment. So those are for backup solutions. For DR, it's specifically for those incidents where you want to quickly recover in case of the entire like data center going down, or the actual like hardware failures might impact for those application availability perspective. So they only need to keep the latest data, the latest and the greatest data, and make sure that it is applicable of quickly failing over to another site that has the most recent data. So, which I'm sure that Sujay will talk more in detail on.
Yep. Can I ask a question real quick, Sujay, before we proceed? So just to frame that out from my perspective, I would do backup as an intentional decision to say, hey, I'm going to do this iteratively, continuously, in some sense. Backup is kind of a constant ongoing decision that you're going to back up. Whereas disaster recovery is, this is something that in an ideal scenario, we would never have to actually use, but we need it in case of an unplanned type of scenario.
I would say that is very accurate.
Okay.
I think Sujay will also talk about some of the scenarios where this DR solution could be more of a benefit than just trying to recover in case of a disaster,
okay.
such as like migration scenario. But you're absolutely right. So for backup, it's going to have on an ongoing basis. For disaster recovery, also the replication needs to happen in place. But in terms of the actual action that takes place, we're hoping that not to happen as frequent as backups. One might, yeah,
right.
as backups, yeah.
So from the user scenario perspective, backup solutions are usually for, hey, I accidentally deleted a file. I want to recover it. My application got corrupted. I want to recover it. Whereas a disaster recovery solution is more of, hey, my website, which is hosting my retail sales channel, suddenly the data center which is hosting that website goes down. And as a customer, you are impacted to by large extent that you need to quickly bring up the entire website up. It's not about just recovering one machine or one file. So you need to plan and orchestrate the whole thing well in advance that you don't want to kind of figure out on that day when an issue happens, hey, run around figuring out how should I bring this VM up, how should I plug things, how will my website come up. From a disaster recovery preparedness, you need to have a good tested recovery plan in place so that you, when something goes wrong, all you have to do is just invoke the disaster recovery plan and your application or your website in the example which I took comes up live in say 30 or 45 minutes. But if you have to reconstruct everything on your own, it will take maybe days. By that time, we have data coming from some of the studies that there are businesses which went out of, like they went bankrupt because their businesses or websites went out for say a few hours to a few days. So if you don't have a good plan, then you're like out of business.
So have either of you ever watched The Office?
I have.
The Office.
Huge
okay.
fan.
Okay.
Fan of Office.
Cynthia, do you watch The Office?
I've watched a couple episodes
oh
and it made
goodness.
Me a little uncomfortable.
Are you serious? Okay, so I'm a
really?
Huge...
Why? Okay.
Because
there's a lot of references that are just not super...
Oh, okay.
Diversity well. Inclusion, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so I take it at face value. I think it's a hilarious show. So I haven't been thinking through that lens, but that's very, I like that you've been thinking that way. But there's an episode where Dwight, that one of the characters on the show, is basically simulating what would happen in the office if there was a fire.
Mm-hmm.
And he does that by literally starting a fire.
Right,
and it's like
right.
the most hysterical. Right. Everyone's freaking out. And I feel like sometimes with disaster recovery, I imagine a scenario where things go down, everyone's freaking out, there's a bunch of people on a call. So how much of this, I know we're going to get into the technology side, but how much of it is also educating the customer on actual organizational strategy around actually enacting the plan? Because people also have to be calm and say, okay, at some point something has to kick off. So where does the automation of that kick in? Maybe you could talk about the technology aspect, but what is also the people aspect of it as well?
Okay, yeah. A lot of times what we have seen with customers is they just enable replication or configure DR and say that, hey, we have a solution that is already configured, everything will just work. But they don't test enough. So there are customers who have not tested their disaster recovery plans over, say, 12 months. And it's very important that any time you have a DR plan, you need to test it periodically. And we do suggest as a best practice to test your plans at least once every 3 months. So that if something goes wrong, you're prepared for it. Like you don't want to, again, do it, learn it on the day when something happens, then it all goes haywire. And from the solution or technology perspective, we have a concept called recovery plan in Azure Site Recovery. So Azure Site Recovery, to give you some context, is a disaster recovery as a service offering on Azure that lets you protect your applications if they're running on Hyper-V, VMware, physical machines on-prem. Or if you are an advanced enterprise who is already running production workloads on Azure virtual machines, you can replicate them to another Azure region so that if something goes wrong in one region, you can quickly recover the application in another region. So apart from just replicating and enabling VMs to come up, we have this powerful capability called Recovery Plan Orchestrator, which helps you sequence the entire boot order of your machines. Like it might be a technical nuance, but I take the simple example of a multi-tier application. If you have a front end and a database, you need to ensure database comes up first, followed by the web tier.
The dependency.
Yes, exactly. And if you look at the traditional DR solutions that customer use on-prem, what they usually have is a handbook of DR activities. Like, hey, this is my DR handbook. And if something goes wrong, execute the step one, followed by step two, run the script, contact XYZ, get an approval, do all of that. Whereas if that is very manual, right? That's very old school. If you have to do all of that on a DR day, it will take a lot of time and it's error prone. So what you can achieve with the recovery plan capability, which I just mentioned, is apart from sequencing the dependencies, we also have integration with Azure automation. You can run your own custom scripts. You can do all that you were doing outside on your own earlier. You can embed them into one recovery plan, and that orchestrates everything. Like if you take a complex application such as an SAP and you want to recover it quickly in less than 1 hour, you need to take care of 100 things, like what is the right sequence, what are the 5 scripts that I have to run to configure certain configuration on the VMs. All of that you can sequence, and with one click you can recover your complex applications such as SAP in under 60 minutes. In case something goes wrong, you can do that.
Yeah, and one thing to add is that this is basically DR drills, right? And a lot of customers do that already today. But the way that they do it is they actually shut down their primary whatever, and they have all these manual steps, and they see whether if your secondary site is kind of working or not, and kind of approve whether if DR is in a healthy state. With Azure Site Recovery, the benefit is that you don't need to interrupt any of your primary sites, right? And you just do a single click on a test failover, and if a recovery plan is structured in a way that it's all, like, you know, error prone because it's all automated behind the scenes by Azure, you know, you can actually see it kind of spin up without interrupting your primary site, which makes the DR drill a lot more easier, a lot more quicker, and you will have that confidence of when, in just in case that disaster happens in your primary site.
So are there places where the DR site, Azure Site Recovery, uh-huh, would actually measure like the performance of your application and identify areas where, oh, your site is down, and then start automatically the process of failover? Or is that something that the users have to go invoke themselves?
Do you want to check that?
Yeah, it's something the users have to go and invoke for, because we don't want to take any hard calls such as automatic failure, which might have unintended consequences.
Like a false positive.
Exactly. So you can automate and keep everything ready, but the big red button to initiate the failover activity, we leave it to the customer or the end user. So he will see all the signals and he will make a call of, hey, something is really wrong. Now I'm going to invoke a failover using ASR.
But you can integrate with the existing ITSM solutions, right? If there is a process in place.
Yes.
And you just add that sequence to it, and that red button is not that the end user would actually have to go to Azure portal and click failover. You would have that if, you know, you can utilize the existing ITSM solutions, right?
Yep. Yeah. It, all the ASR capabilities, like any other Azure service, is fully extensible, available on all the automated platforms. Yes, as you mentioned, you can always get it integrated into your own ITSM platforms, your own portals. So you can do all of that. Like, you don't have to come all the way to portal to do that, as Vaughn mentioned.
Right, and so it can live in like ServiceNow or whatever,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
So the idea, though, is that the user or the customer has the autonomy to make that decision,
yes,
regardless of if they're automating it as part of their internal process or if they're doing it manually themselves.
Right.
Yep.
But kind of following up on that, are there plans for customers, for example, to set certain threshold and say, like, if they're running CPU at this, or if they're, I'm not getting any response for these requests, then start a failover? Is that something that could potentially be in the future, or?
But I have a question on that too, though, is would that also be metrics that tell you that you need to scale, right? So it's kind of like, how do you make a determination if that means your VMs are down or you just need to scale up or out?
Right.
Right.
So, I mean,
I'm just thinking out loud here.
No, yeah, that's a great point, because you need to define what disaster actually is,
exactly,
right?
And it's hard to.
Yeah. The easiest way, though, is like, you know, from a network communication perspective, if there's no response, which we actually integrate traffic manager's capability with Azure Site Recovery. And the traffic manager can point into two locations, primary and the secondary. And if the primary site seems to be down, then traffic manager is capable of understanding that, okay, this is a disaster and ASR needs to do something. And it can invoke that procedure, right? Mm-hmm. But in terms of like performance from a CPU basis, I don't know. There could be an integration of, all right, so this you know, may have an issue, so we might consider this as a disaster. But the important thing is that when you replicate with Azure Site Recovery, the CPU spec and everything would probably be similar, right? So it might have the exact same issue. So I believe that there would be some determination that needs to be done when you configure the disaster recovery plan on that front. Yeah.
So from the configuration perspective, what Vaughn mentioned is correct. Like if you're replicating a machine from, say, Site A to Azure, we maintain the same configuration. So yeah, if it's a, if you fully automate it, it depends on the customer's intelligence and if he has the right signals to implement the automation around invoking the failure. Yes, he has the capability to do that. But again, it's a trade-off call that they have to make on their own rather than we doing something for them automatically, which again, the consequences of initiating something in a false positive scenario is very, very bad than not letting them do it. So the trade-off here is very high. So we expect them to make an intelligent choice and have right signals in place. Okay, the website is down or their internal sales application is down. Then they have some balances and checks to see, hey, are there any indications that the entire application is impacted? Is there a hardware issue or a data center issue or a power issue? They can see all of that and make a call.
So this is going to be a little bit more of a, maybe a little bit lower level and a bit personal in that I'm thinking this as we speak. But let's say that I have, you know, something like a Cosmos DB where I have global replication, or I have, you know, my app service is geo-redundant or something. And I go down in, maybe one data center goes down, but technically I still have some resources up other places. So what is the layering that happens in order to actually kick off the disaster recovery? Because in some senses, wouldn't it just say, okay, traffic manager is going to reroute traffic, but then I'm also maybe having resources there that are down. So would it be, I can maybe continue to serve off of these other locations while disaster recovery is kicking off for this particular region?
So the way to see it is the example which you took, the Cosmos DB, is a good example where it falls into the category where it's an active-active scenario where you have application running in region A, say East US, and another application running in Central US. So it falls into that category where you have an active-active DR solution where you don't need to initiate a specific failure. But there are this lot of these legacy applications which come from on-prem. Customers, usually not every application can be architected to achieve the active-active configuration. It comes with a cost, it comes with a complexity. So if you have an application which can't be deployed across regions in an active-active mode and leverage technologies such as Cosmos DB, which offer the advanced synchronous replication capabilities, then you have to go for the next best possible solution where even if it's not active-active, you try to replicate it and keep it as close as possible in terms of data to the original location's data. That's what we actually do with ASR.
Awesome.
We continuously replicate the VM disks to the other region. So at max, they will fall 10 to 15 minutes behind. There's some amount of data loss that can happen, but the disks in the other region are getting caught up to the data changes happening in the source region. And when users initiate a failover, what we do is, using the data that was already copied, we spin up the VMs. Ah. So these are the applications that couldn't have run in an active-active mode. So you have to always run in one region, but we keep the other region in warm standby mode so that when you initiate a failover, we just spin up the application there.
Awesome. That really helps me clarify, because I think some of our listeners might be more, you know, especially us that are newer to the space, a lot of what we do is PaaS things that have all of this stuff built in. And the reality is that's just not the case for most applications.
Yeah.
So when we talk about customers who aren't already on Azure, who maybe are thinking disaster recovery is my entry point to the cloud. What do you have to say to that, and maybe some scenarios maybe that you've worked with where that's been the case?
Yep. So disaster recovery is a good starting point for a lot of these enterprises who have traditionally maintained two different data centers, one as their primary and the other as their secondary data center. And as you know, if as a customer, if you're maintaining two data centers, it comes with a huge CapEx. And it involves a lot of OpEx as well. You need to continuously refresh the hardware, maintain the hardware. It comes with a lot of cost. So the main advantage of you moving to cloud is you don't have to worry about hardware maintenance or any refreshes anymore. Like, it's Azure takes care of that for you. So as a starting point, you can start kind of deprecating your secondary data center as a first step towards your cloud journey, and then remove your secondary site and use Azure as the disaster recovery site. That way, you get an opportunity to test that your application runs in Azure as well. Like, you as an enterprise might be worried today that, hey, I have an application which is already running in my on-prem site. I have this buzzword called cloud. Can I even leverage the cloud? I have a worry that what if my application doesn't run fine? So there we are giving an option where you don't have to move your primary application directly to Azure. First, leverage Azure as the DR site. That way, you're testing and validating that your application can run fine in Azure. And that is your natural next step would be, hey, I'm using Azure as the DR site. Everything is running fine. Then why do I even have to run my application on-prem? Then next natural step would be to move your application to Azure. So it's a good, DR would be a good starting point scenario for a lot of these enterprises to evaluate cloud, move their applications to cloud.
Right.
So go ahead, Cynthia.
So I know a lot of times DR and HA are talked to together. Mm. So we've been focusing a lot on disaster recovery. Does disaster recovery already guarantee HA, or is that something else that people also need to consider?
And HA can they being high availability.
Yes.
I think thing to note is that the difference between HA and DR is the outcome of the downtime that customer can expect. For high availability, typically, there should be no downtime, which means that if one of the resources goes down, you have to respond without the service going down. That's HA, right? And for disaster recovery, it's a little bit more cheaper in a sense, but you need to have that service up and running in case of whatever disaster happens within 24 hours or within a week, right? There's different business needs, but that kind of calls out that it's so expensive to have everything highly available, because you basically have to replicate whatever resources that you have 2, 3, 4, 5 times, right? So typically that does not work for all of your resources. It may definitely work for some like mission critical applications and services or the backbone services. We highly recommend you to leverage all type of high availability like features or capabilities that Azure provides as part of infrastructure. But like for DR, like it does not have that like no downtime kind of a thinking process for most customers today. Right,
So I'm still stuck a little bit on the disaster recovery to the cloud, because I can just imagine being like, okay, I'm sitting in the CTO's office, I'm designing our strategy. Let's say I've decommissioned data center 2, I'm now in data center 1. So what has to happen? Do I need somebody to come evaluate everything on site to determine what I would need in the cloud? How do I know what virtual machines I need? How do I actually do the testing every 3 months? Does that mean I'm basically failing over every 3 months to the cloud? And I guess that's just it seems like a difficult process. What's the first, let's say we've decommissioned, is it an assessment of my applications? Like, what would be?
Or even you probably want to do the assessment before you decommission. Mm-hmm.
I guess I want to know maybe what are the
sequence
are the first,
of how
yeah,
things
maybe
happen.
Just a couple of, yeah.
Yeah. So what we offer from the Azure Site Recovery is we have a tool called Deployment Planner that helps you, like when you can take that tool, run in your environment, and that helps you know what are the compatibility of your machines running on-prem with Azure. Are there any limitations? Are there any gotchas that you need to be aware of, you need to plan for. How do you, what is the infrastructure you need to plan on the Azure side? How many subscriptions are needed, or how many storage accounts are needed, or how many managed disks are needed? All of that. So this deployment plan is a one-stop tool that before even getting started or deploying the DR solution, you can use this tool, run in your environment for a few days, and that will give you all the planning outputs, what network bandwidth you need, because end of the day, replication is all about sending data continuously from on-prem to Azure, right? Networking plays a key role there. Like, how much is the net overall networking bandwidth that you will need to keep your VMs up to date with respect to replication? So that's the first step will be to run the deployment planner tool, figure out all the planning things that you need to do, get prepared, and then start replicating to Azure. And the second question you have is around the test failure or the DR drills, right? As Vaughn mentioned earlier, we have this feature in ASR called test failover, which lets you like simulate the DR scenario. So you don't have to bring your production application down to even test this. So even though it might sound hard or complex that you have to do it every 3 months, but it's not that complex. So once you have a recovery plan there, you just, all you have to do is just click and see that your VMs are coming fine, all the connectivity are working fine and all. It won't, it's not that complex. Like, if you have to do everything one by one, like create VM1, create VM2, followed by some other scripts, maybe it's complex. But with the ASR service, we are making it simple for you. You can just have a pre-tested plan ready. You can do DR drills as many times as you want. And you don't have to pay any additional amount for the machines that are running on Azure till you start them. So that is the key advantage.
Okay. So I'm not having to pay for basically a whole data center in Azure every time I want to test DR.
Yes.
Okay.
Then what, from like a customer perspective, if that what that's what you're telling me, then really I'm not really failing over, am I? Because my primary is still running.
Right. That's why we call it test failover.
It's a drill.
Yeah.
Right? It's a failover drill.
It's like the fire drill you do. Maybe you've had done,
yes,
one of these in the office.
On the office, remember? Maybe don't actually
start
the fire. Don't actually,
yeah,
take the data center down.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, awesome. So I think that this was great. One thing that I would love to see if I can squeeze out of y'all is, are there any, you know, tips that you have, first of all, any best practices, things that you've seen in the field you want people to know, like, hey, keep this in mind when you're thinking DR? And then are there any updates to this offering that are coming out of build or that may be in the pipeline for our customers to be aware of?
Okay. In terms of best practices, maybe I have already touched a bit when I was previously talking about the deployment planner. It's the first step any customer has to do. So we have a large retail customer in US who is planning to implement DR for thousands of their machines on-prem to Azure running on VMware platform. So the first thing is, yes, you need to run the deployment planner. And the next most important thing is the networking aspect. So what ASR does is it replicates the machines for you. They come up as VMs in Azure, but end of the day, these machines need to talk to each other over the right IPs, right networking configuration.
And other people's traffic needs to be routed there, right?
Exactly. So all of this, networking planning is one thing that customers have to get it right to ensure they don't face any issues when they start testing the DR or actually executing the DR. So that's, also.
So do they essentially get a new set of IP ranges for their VMs? Or
so
can they maintain their original ranges?
Yep, we do provide the capability to maintain the same IP ranges as long as there is no overlap. Like if there is an active connection between Azure and on-prem, then you can't have overlapping IP ranges. But
right,
you can actually isolate a subnet and get the same IPs that your machines were having on-prem, so that on Azure, when they're talking to each other, they talk through the same private IPs and you don't have any issues.
Awesome.
And second thing I wanted to call out is, again, the networking aspect, especially when it comes to applications running on Azure. So we have covered a lot about, if you have applications running on on-prem, how do you enable DR? what are the best practices. But once you move to Azure, your production applications, you still have the same DR need, even though the application is running on Azure, because inherently Azure provides a lot of resilience built in the platform. But still, as a customer, you need to be prepared for scenarios such as what happens if my entire Azure region can potentially go down. Yeah, it's not that we want it to go down, but in case that happens, you need to be prepared for everything, right? Like, it's your mission critical application. You don't want that to go down even for a few hours. So when you're configuring DR for Azure virtual machines to another Azure region, it's much simpler compared to on-prem, because it's all parity. Unlike on-prem, you don't have to do the compatibility check between the machine, CPU, RAM, disk sizes, all of that, because you are already on Azure and ASR automatically creates the required target configuration. But you still need to get the networking configuration around it, like the load balancers, the express route connectivity from which was earlier in the to the primary region. You now want to redirect the express route connectivity to the DR region. So you need to plan the networking aspects correct to get your DR solution right. So yes, for applications running on Azure virtual machines, networking planning is the thing to plan for as a best practice that I would suggest for any customer who is implementing ASR on Azure VMs.
Right, and I think there was this question around roadmap. I think last year, Azure Site Recovery has announced the support of SAP application running on Azure, and SAP is typically really large, right? And just having that supportability is quite huge. And SAP is typically a mission critical application, so we have tested thoroughly, and I think we are confident to say that you know, leverage ASR for your SAP environment on Azure, so that you will be fail safe from like disasters that we don't want to happen, but
yes,
we can't be.
You need
totally
to be always
from.
Prepared.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And a few other features is Azure as a platform continuously innovates, right? We keep adding new disk sizes. Like earlier, we were supporting only 4 TB disks. Now Azure supports up to 16 TB disks. So
it's crazy.
Yeah. And there are a lot of these platform enhancements that keep happening. And then ASR also keeps supporting those new features. So some of the new features that are going to come in the next 3 to 4 months for Azure Site Recovery are support for large disk sizes, support for custom managed keys, which Azure Storage supports. And like all of these platform enhancements, we do support it. And that's the key roadmap feature that will come alive.
Is the deployment planner specific for VMware, or is that applicable to all?
So we have the deployment planner for on-prem to Azure, be it Hyper-V or VMware.
Okay.
On Azure, you don't need to do a lot of deployment planning, because you are just replicating your application to the other region. It's all parity. So you don't have to worry a lot as a customer. We'll take care of it for you. But when you're coming from on-prem, things or sizes or configurations that were supported on-prem might not be available, or you don't know what is the best match. So we'll help you figure all of that, any gotchas and all of that. So deployment planner, we have it only for on-prem to Azure, but not Azure to Azure.
And we've done a couple of episodes, and we did one in January, I think, December or January, on the fact that, you know, outages happen. There's downtime sometimes.
And it did happen.
It does happen. But we do also have a really great podcast on the ways that we try to make those as transparent as possible. Mm-hmm. And so that's just something else I want to call out, is if you're listening and you want to know more about the things that we're doing to make sure that outages that happen, we don't allow the outage that happened that way to happen again. You know, that's the goal, is if we can, you know, figure out why an outage happens, the goal is hopefully that exact same kind of outage will no longer be something that reoccurs. So I think that's a good episode to listen to, just to hear more about what we're doing in that space.
Right.
And then Azure Status is really the best place to check the status of all the services across different regions.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think at Ignite, which will happen in November this year, we're going to have very detailed information around what did we learn from these type of outages, mm-hmm. and how do we improve? And there's a lot of stories that we can tell today. One of the key things is that we are so confident enough that we are, you know, humble and we want to learn. We can always we want to use our latest technology to respond to these failures. We can never avoid these failures, right? Outages will happen, but we're confident enough to say that we're trying our best not to have the similar incidents to happen and cause these type of outages. So we're treating everything really, really as a significant incidents that we can learn from and make sure that we are transparently sharing those information to our customers to gain confidence and to make sure that, this is a very different incident from any previous incident that might have happened. So, yeah.
I think that's a really good call out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you all so much for coming on the show. I know personally I learned a lot, and I know some customers that maybe I ask questions with them in mind. So I really appreciate y'all sharing all this great knowledge with us.
Same here. I'm about to go talk to my customer about that 3 months DR plan that they should update.
Exactly. Of course. Well, thanks again. I hope y'all enjoy. I guess I was going to say the rest of Build, but it's almost over.
Well, we have the celebration.
It's the celebration tonight. So thanks again, and hopefully we'll have y'all on the show in the future to hear any future updates that you have to share.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
Thank you
so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.